This week is Parshas Vayeshev, and in Vayeshev there are a lot of topics. Of course, the overall theme switches from being about Yaakov and to being focused more on Yosef and all of Yaakov's kids, Yosef and his brothers. We'll see an interesting distinction which is made when it comes to they're being depicted in some cases as brothers, in some cases as being sons, and what that means. So hopefully we'll get through. I went through this and took extensive notes. Hopefully we won't go through everything inside, but hopefully we'll cover everything that's in this in the packet. And as usual, the main goal was to try to bring out things which I hope were newer insights that perhaps you haven't seen before, or maybe a little different than things we're all familiar with. Okay, the parsha begins with telling us Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv be'eretz Canaan, that Yaakov lived in the land where his fathers had lived, be'eretz Canaan. So it's a strange. Just tell us where Yaakov lived. And we saw a little bit about where Yaakov lived in last week's parsha when he lived near Shechem, and then he went to Beit El where his father lived, and then the parsha concludes that he's at Yitzchak's funeral. Now, of course, Yitzchak doesn't die until 10 years before Yaakov shows up in Egypt, because Yaakov shows up when he's 130, and Yaakov and Yitzchak, as we know, are 60 years apart. The Torah tells us that Yitzchak is 180 when he dies, which means that Yaakov is 120 when Yitzchak dies. So if Yaakov shows up in Egypt when he's 130, that means that Yosef is in prison at the time when Yitzchak actually dies. So Yitzchak's death is recorded at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, basically because his story ends there. But in any case, the question is, where is he living? So why do you say Be'eretz Canaan and Be'eretz Megurei Aviv? So the Netziv notes, if you look on the first line, you'll see towards the end, the first line, he says that the idea of mentioning that he's in Be'eretz Canaan is because it's mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Okay, it's showing us that where Yaakov needs to be. Where Yaakov needs to be is in a fulfillment of that element of mitzvah. Now, it's an interesting question as to whether that's a fulfillment at that point in time, especially since there had been a promise to Avram that your children are going to be strangers in a strange land for 400 years. And, is there being in Eretz Canaan considered to be part of that, or is it only when they're in Eretz Mitzrayim? But the answer is that while they're in Eretz Canaan, it's still called Eretz Canaan because it's not yet their land. So is that considered to be, being strangers in a strange land? Eretz Megurei Aviv, that's the if you look immediately below that, Sheyashav be'Eretz Megurei Aviv, below Pirei Sheyashav be'Chevron, Yir Megurei Aviv. It doesn't say that he's living in Chevron, where his father or grandfather lived, or may have spent some time. And the reason is, look at the last line, after the comma, fifth word, V'hu kadei lios badad kadarko. That Yaakov is unique. Yaakov just has his own way. He doesn't follow, if you look, for example, and you compare the story of Yitzchak, the story of Abraham, there are very, very many parallels. They have very similar stories. And Yitzchak looked like Abraham, and there's a whole lot to that idea. But Yaakov kind of goes on his own path in a number of different ways. Of course, in the way that he related to dealing, right? I mean, one major difference between Yitzchak and Yaakov is that Yitzchak's wife was brought to Yitzchak, whereas Yaakov went out to find his wives, ultimately. So there's a significant difference there, but in general, Yaakov's way is very different from that of Yitzchak and Abraham, Yitzchak paralleling Abraham's stories in many ways. Okay, so we're introducing the next pasuk to Yosef. Yehlo told us Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvas Reshana, Yoro Esachav Batzon. And we've seen the Netziv say that the word toldos doesn't necessarily mean generations, but it means the stories of. Okay, so that's that basically answers the question. If anybody's going to say, Eli told us Yaakov, Yosef, and Trestrak, what about the other kids? He says, that's not what toldos necessarily means. It's the stories of Yaakov, and this story concerns his kids. Hayaro'eh Esechav Batzon. What does it mean that he was Ro'eh Esechav? Was he shepherding his brothers? It's an interesting question. Okay, we're not going to look at that today, but the next one, the next part of the pasuk says, "V'hu na'ar es b'nei Bilhav es b'nei Zilpah nashei Aviv." And what is a na'ar? What is a na'ar? So typically, we translate the word na'ar to mean a youth, but as is one example which he gives here, I mean, one we all know, Yehoshua ben Nun, na'ar, lo yamish b'tocha oil. How old is Yehoshua when he is a na'ar to Moshe?
30s, 40s.
He's 40. He's at least 40. Yeah. So that's exactly what it is. So if you look at the very beginning, it says Mashmaut Nar Misharis. Okay, somebody who serves. You have Shaul's Nar who's with him when Shaul dies. He's his arms bearer. What, he's 13 years old? I hardly doubt it. Okay, so he's a Misharis. He's somebody who serves him. So that's the first point which he makes. But the second point which he makes is Unaris b'nei Bilav as b'nei Zilpa Neshe Aviv. So leaving aside the fact that Bilav and Zilpa are being referred to as Neshe Aviv, as being Yaakov's wives, as opposed to Shifchos, but look at the way that it describes Yosef's relationship specifically to those brothers. So if you look in the Nitziv's comment here towards the end of the third line, Upir Shakasov Khan, Shay Yosef Mishameshosam Vahemo Yu Mishamshimoso, that they'd kind of serve each other. If you think about their ages, for example, certainly by the time Zilpah gets on the scene, it is very likely that Yosef was the same age as at least Asher. I mean, very likely. So more or less, I mean that they're pretty close in age. So in terms of their, you know, there's that difference, you know, in age. Not that the differences in age are so big, but Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda were born pretty quickly in the scheme of things. And then there's a little bit of a gap, and then Dan and Naphtali come along, and Gad and Asher come along, and Zvulun and Yisachar come along, and then Yosef comes along. So Yosef, it seems, at least according to the pasuk, would hang out more with Bilhah and Zilpah's children. Vayave Yosef as Diba Samra El Avihem. Yosef would bring their Diba Ra'a. What is Diba Ra'a? So the tails. Yeah. So who's Diba Ra'a? The bad things that they did. Who's they?
The brothers.
All the brothers?
Zilpah's,
so the pasuk would seem to imply that it's the ways that Bilhah and Zilpah's children were behaving. So take a look at the next line in that same comment on Vehu Na'ar. So it's the second to last line. Well, actually, the last word in the previous line. Vayave Yosef es dibo samra al avihem shelo isna'agu imo karoi. Okay, they, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, did not treat Yosef nicely. Bishamachi sanu hema oso b'nei Bilhah b'nei Zilpah. So this gives pause, or reason rather, to the b'nei Bilhah b'nei Zilpah to hate Yosef because they don't like the fact that he's tattling on them. Okay, now, to what degree is Yosef actually tattling on them? Is Yosef being, you know, a big snitch and he's telling the whole world about them? Well, the pasuk says that Yosef is divasam ra'a el avihem. He's only bringing it to their father. Take a look at the next thing. So the Nitziv explains to us some of the rules of how Lashon Hara works. So if you look in the middle of the first line, Hamasaper in yanei chavero lerabi mikrei motzi. Somebody who says things that are happening, you know, that the friends are doing, but the person expresses it to the masses, that is a motzi. That's a really bad kind of guy. Okay? What does the pasuk say about Yosef? Vayavei Yosef. Motzi is to go out, to spread information. But mevi is somebody, skip two lines, okay? Aval hamasaper in the middle of the line. Aval hamasaper in yanecha beiro liyachid mikre mevi. Somebody who only tells it to an individual and it stays with that individual and it doesn't become a source for real gossip. But you know what? Maybe the individual needs to deal with it. Maybe the individual is on a need-to-know basis, but it doesn't go past there. So that is a mevi. So and a mevi is much better. Go to the end of that line. Mishmachi kan shehevi Yosef dvarav. It's putting Yosef in a much better light than we typically think of Yosef as, he's a snitch and he's a tattler, when, first of all, it's a personal issue between him and B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah, and who's he bringing that information to? To the one person who really needs to deal with it, and that's Yaakov. Now, that's not going to make the B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah like him. Okay, I'm like, what are you going to do? So stop mistreating him. But that's, you know, that's a different conversation. Okay, the next pasuk says, "V'Yisrael ahavis Yosef mikol banav kiven zkunim hulo." That it says that he loved Yosef from all of his sons because he was ben zkunim, the son of his old age, which is just an odd thing to say because they're kind of all, I mean, they're all more or less the same age, with the exception, they're all, you know, 5-6 years apart, but not such a big deal. Certainly the son of Zilpah and Zvulun are going to be around the same age as Yosef. Just do simple math and figuring that out. V'asa lo ksonas pasim, and his father made for him this special cloak. Okay, next, I just want to show you the next two words in the next pasuk. Vayiru echav, his brothers saw ki oso ahav avihem mikol echav, that he was loved of all of the brothers. Okay, how did it describe the way Yaakov loved Yosef? V'Yisrael havas Yosef mikol banav. Okay, so now it's fascinating that just that little subtlety, that little nuance, the Nitziv jumps on and says that all of the problems which come about are a result of a terrible misunderstanding. Okay, Yaakov loved Yosef in the way in which he did, mikol banav, from all of his sons. Was he playing favorites of his sons? Okay, the brothers looked at it from, of all of us brothers, this one's what makes him special? Okay, and look at the way that the Nitziv presents it. Again, Pasuk Gimel. Okay, so look at the second line, Pasuk Gimel. Sherabo and Yanim Ruchaniim Sherau Ilyava. That what Yaakov discerned in Yosef were spiritual things that were deserving of love. Uchsiv mikol banav, v'lo mikol achav. It's from all of Yaakov's sons. In other words, it's a Yaakov to the sons relationship, and not Yosef amongst all of his brothers. Okay, and the point is, if you look at the fourth line, the reason is because he discerned greater qualities of Yosef. Yisrael shel Yosef haya b'teva Yaakov yoter mishari banav, that he saw things in Yosef that reminded him of himself, which he did not see in any of his other kids. He saw that Yosef loves kindness, Yosef loves peace, which are midasot shel Yaakov, alichos. That's the way Yaakov tries to relate to the world. I mean, obviously Yaakov sometimes needs to deal with difficult figures, most notably in recent times, Lavan, but that's not the way Yaakov wants to relate to people. And I mean, of course, in dealing with Shechem. But this is what Yaakov sees in Yosef. Yosef happened to be better than his brothers in that arena. But again, Yaakov's looking at it from a perspective of, I'm not picking out which of the brothers is the best. I'm just seeing something in of all my kids, you know, and I'm sure that any parent sees, you know, thank God all kids are different, and that's fine. But in some kid, the parent might see, oh man, that reminds me of when I was that age, or that reminds me of me now, because some kids just take on those qualities in a way that the others do not. And it's something which, I'm not excusing it, but it's not so much a favoritism as much as it's a nostalgia, perhaps, or something. Again, I'm not excusing it, but it's on account of that the next pasuk, as I pointed out, says, Vayir'u echav, that the brothers saw this, and the brothers became jealous of it. And who are the brothers? Nitziv says, that's B'nai Leah. So the earlier pasuk put Yosef in the doghouse from B'nai Bilhah and Zilpah. Here, it's the B'nai Leah. Shaloi v'diba samra, Yosef didn't talk about the B'nai Leah to Yaakov. They hated him because they were jealous. And they assumed, because they looked at it from the perspective, look at the rest of that line. Okay, but that's not the way their father looked at it. The father looked at him in Kol Banav. He wasn't playing favorites. He just, there's something about this kid, something about this one of my kids, and that's the problem. Shetou b'dim yonam. They made an error. Chashvu shalom yishamot samala b'yichud shushayich l'banim avo b'yoter. They didn't see that it was because of something that Yosef, it was a certain quality that Yosef had. He wasn't playing favorites, saying, oh, you know, all my kids, I love this one the best. Oh, you know, of all of his brothers, I'm picking which one's the best of the brothers. It's just something about this one in particular. And look at the way that he puts it. He says, Ela ahavo biyoter mikol achav, afilu lo ayubon of klal. This had nothing to do with the fact that they were his kids or that they were brothers, even if he were not related to any of them. Right, sometimes, you know, think about a mentor, right? A mentor who just takes to a particular student or a particular, you know, somebody in the office. Why? Because there's something about it, and that is what Yaakov saw in Yosef. Had nothing to do with there being family, there being his being his kid, his being his brother, or being brothers to the other ones. It was just something which was, and sometimes it's unavoidable. You can't necessarily stem those natural feelings when there's that familiarity, which is so enticing to the especially to the mentor, the older person, and that's the issue. And so he says that's the reason why there was kinah. Mishamachi ba kinah b'libo. Okay, now we know that immediately what follows all this is that Yosef starts to have these dreams. So I think it was last year I pointed out that if you look carefully, that it could be, we only know Yosef, of two dreams that Yosef spells out to us. But this could say, right? He had a dream and he told it to his brothers. And they hated him. Okay, they hated him because he's telling them his dreams. This could be another dream, right? He says, I listen to this dream that I had. And then he goes on to describe the bundles, and then a little later, another pasuk tes. If you look, that could be a third dream, or however you want to count it. And then it could be the second half of the pasuk, that could possibly even be a fourth dream. Okay, but how much is he telling them the details? So the Netziv says, it's interesting, that he says that when you have a dream, I imagine, like, you have a dream. Would you come in here and say, hey, folks, now you might like everybody here, but how many people are you actually going to say, can I tell you guys my dream? Especially if it's a weird dream. Right, who do you tell it to?
Your wife.
Right, to somebody who's actually going to listen. But not only that, but somebody with whom you're really close. Right, maybe you tell it to your siblings. Right, maybe you tell it if you have siblings, if your parents are. You might tell it, but only to somebody who's really close to you. So the Netziv says, look at the second line. You only tell a dream to somebody that you love. It's in the Gemara, it's in the Zohar. They may have these kinds of negative feelings, but Yosef is saying, "Hey guys, you're my brothers. Okay, I want to tell you what's going on in my life, and this is really, really close." Now, it backfired because they all have their own issues with him, which are arguably, as I mentioned earlier, based in a misunderstanding. And as we see, the pasuk says that they hated him. The last thing they wanted to hear from him is his goofy dreams, right? And that's the problem here. I'm not going to get into the dreams. I think that those have been studied enough, and so we'll just move on from there. But again, the fact that Yosef is reaching out shows. I don't know that he was oblivious to the way everybody was feeling about him, but maybe he was trying to say, look, you might have your feelings, but hey, we're brothers. Okay. The Sheni tells us that the brothers go out, Liros es tzon avihem bishchem. They go out, Liros. Liros means to shepherd, tzon avihem bishchem. Now, so the Netziv jumps, I don't know why he jumps on that language, but he does have something to say. He says, why is it called tzon avihem? Why doesn't it just say that they were shepherding the sheep, right? It's part of their family. Look at the second line in your base. He says that basically they took liberties, I guess, with their shepherding, and somehow they benefited in a way that they were not supposed to. In other words, if they're working for the family, then fine, they're working for their father's stuff and etc. But somehow, whatever this ra'u esatzman with son avihem was something which the Netziv uses as a negative.
What's the avir gerus avir? What's the first avir that he's referring to? That led to them taking liberties.
I'm not sure, honestly, because I didn't. My mikra chaser. I mean, he says the mikra is chaser. Ilu aya kasuv esatzon kama leel beiz esachav batzon. That maybe it's hayaro esachav batzon. Maybe that's what it's related to. In other words, that Yosef had to shepherd his brothers because they were fooling around in whatever way. So that's the.
Oh, we'll talk to the sale of Yosef.
Well, yeah, could be. So maybe that's what it's Goreres. Okay. So knowing that this background and these negative feelings exist, so Yaakov calls Yosef and says to him, Halo achecha ro'im b'shchem. Your brothers are shepherding in Shechem. Now, there's a little bit of an irony there because Shechem is a place that we have seen where bad things happen. Okay. But anyway, he says, L'chavesh l'chachalehem. I'm going to send you there. Vayomer lo hineni. Now, where have we seen hineni before?
Avram?
Yeah, Avram at the Akedah and Yitzchak at the Akedah, right? So the Netziv makes that comparison and says that when somebody says hineni, first of all, it's for a big deal, it's for a big important mission. And in Yosef's case, he says, you know, he knew it was dangerous, but nevertheless, uv bitzidkaso uvetumo. It's the second line of Yud Gimel. He says, in his righteousness and in his innocence, he went, recognizing that there might be a problem, but he went anyway. Okay, so you know that's fine. It is you know, I guess to a small degree, maybe it's Yosef's fault. His father said to him, "Go to Shechem and tell me what's going on." And he goes to Shechem and finds that his brothers aren't there. So really, he should go back home and say the brothers weren't there. You know, and then a different result may have ended up happening. But Pasuk Tesvav comes along. A man found him, and Yosef was, you know, lost, wandering around. And the guy asked him, What are you seeking? What are you looking for? What do you want? And Yosef's response is great. I'm looking for my brothers. Okay, and that's a message of every Jew, that we should be seeking out our brothers and doing whatever we can for them. But the Netziv focuses on a different question, and that is, this guy was in all likelihood a stranger. Why are they having this conversation? Why is he giving him all this information? So he says there are two possibilities. If you look at the third line in Tezvav, El Achas Mishtei Ela, there's two possibilities as to what's going on. One, Oshaya Ish Yadua Lahem Bachashivus, that maybe this was somebody who they knew and recognized and was an important figure. Oh, he kirbo shumalach onavi shiyeda kol ma'ashim mechav. Or maybe Yosef was able to discern about him that either he was an angel, which is an opinion that the commentaries have, or that he was a prophet who would know about what happened to the brothers. Oba emes, the Netziv goes one step further. He says, Hayaroi luchto vayimtsa ish. It should say that Yosef found a man. What does Vayimtsa Ehu Ish mean? It means that the man found him. Yosef's the one who should be, you know, he's wandering around until he sees a guy. Oh, there's a guy. Vayimtsa Ish. He found a man. And then he asked the guy for directions or whatever it was. El Abalalamed, I'm in the middle of the second to last line. El Abalalamed, Shaliach min Shemayim Levgobi Yosef, Ulavil Dekach. That the Torah is showing us that the fact that this ish found Yosef means that he was a shaliach min Shemayim. Whether he was an angel or whether he was just a man or a prophet or whatever it may be, that he was sent from God to find Yosef and to put him in a different direction. Okay, so now Yosef goes, and we know the fact that the brothers see him from a distance, and they plan to kill him. That's the first plan. And the Pasuk of Aleph says, "Vayishmar Reuven hears this, Vayatzileu miyadam, and he saves them from their hands. He saves him from their hands. Vayomer lo nakenu nafesh. Okay, Vayomer alehem Reuven. So note the way that the Pasuk says it. Vayomer, and he said, lo nakenu nafesh, we will not strike him mortally. Okay, Vayomer alehem, and Reuven said to them, do not spill any blood. So what's the striking difference between the way Reuven's speech is presented here? In the first case, it just says Vayomer. In the second time, it says Vayomer alehem. So the Netziv says, what does that tell us? That the first time that Reuven spoke, you know who he was speaking to? Himself. Take a look at this. I put it in bold. Come up across. Reuven, you know, sometimes people do this. You get to a decision and you just say it out loud. Reuven was talking to himself. He says, it's not happening. Lona can enough. We are not killing him. There is no way. Once they heard Reuven, who was so assertive in his view that what you guys are talking about is insane, but Reuven's listening to it, processing on his own, he's like, this can't be. No way. This is not happening. And then Reuven turns to them and says, and then the next pasuk, right, when in pasuk HaBeis, when you turn the page 204, so Reuven says, hold on, al tishpichu dam. We're not spilling any blood. We're going to put him into this into this pit. It's in the wilderness. We're not going to put any hand. And Reuben's plan is Lamana Tzil. So Reuben's plan is to save him later. So now, one of the points which the Netziv then mentions, although it's not based on the way the pasuk is presented here, but it's based on the way when Reuven comes back later. If you look, just skip to the bottom of the page, on page 204, you'll see after the sale is over and done, Vayashav Reuven el abor, v'hinei ein Yosef abor v'yikras b'gadav. So Reuven comes back to take Yosef out of the pit, finds that he's not there, so he tears the clothing. Vayashav el achav, he returns to his brothers, v'yomar, and he says, top of page 206, hayeled einenu v'ani ana aniva. Okay, he says, the boy is missing, and me, I don't know what's going to be with me. Okay, so how does he describe Yosef?
Yeled.
Now, we've talked in the past about how you have Yeled, which is presumably younger. You have Na'ar, which is a little older than Yeled, and then you have whatever else. You know, Ish, I mean, we haven't gotten to the point of Ish yet. But why is Reuben referring to him as a Yeled? That's a strange language, considering that we've at least seen him as a Na'ar, and presumably Yeled is younger than a Na'ar. So take a look at this Pasuk HaBeis in the Netziv. Okay? So he says here, Reuven's plan was, of course, to save Yosef. Look at the end of the second line. Emes hoya b'das Reuven shelo lashem es Yosef al chalom osav b'al devarav she nira she'ena mehuganim. Reuven was not going to blame Yosef for the things that he was dreaming and the things which he was saying, even if they're a little improper. Kamo she'amar Reuven la'achim achar kach alo amarte lechem al techadu b'al yelid. Do you remember? Remember, we haven't seen it yet, but in Parshas Miketz, when Reuven is when they're dealing with all the problems that they're dealing with because Yosef, who they don't know is Yosef, is the ruler, and he's giving them such a hard and difficult time, Reuven turns to them and says, you know why all this is happening? Because I told you guys not to sin with the boy. With the boy? What boy? Meaning, with Yosef, he's referring to him as a Yeled, Uperisho, Shekolza Eino Ela Maisa Yaldus. What Reuven is looking at Yosef says, you know what, this is all Narishkeit. Yosef telling these dreams, Yosef behaving this way, he's immature, just give him a pass, it's not such a big deal. Why do we have to be so hung up about the way that Yosef is behaving? All right, you know, here's a guy, he's looking in the mirror all the time, he's dealing with his curly locks, he smiles and tells himself, hey, handsome devil, you know what I mean? Seriously, this is what you guys are getting all upset about? Don't get upset. Right, Yosef, Reuven was not able to get them to get over whatever it is that they were upset about with Yosef, and so that's the way he tries to, you know, to speak to them, to explain to them, but you know, whether they're on the same page. And by the way, the Netziv is a lot more generous with Reuven than other commentaries are. Okay, I mean, he looks at Reuven as, I mean, I think that Reuven, in a sense, is heroic. I mean, he made errors, but the Netziv is very generous with his view on Reuven. The next couple of things here in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, just you know, want to Pasuk Chaf Dalet, where he just describes that when they take Yosef and they put him in. So first of all, he says that they lowered him in, as opposed to just pushing him in or dropping him in, because they didn't want him to get injured. Right? If they dropped him in, he could break a leg, he could knock his head against the rock. And the idea of habor reik, so you know, Rashi says about the no water or the chashim akravim. So he says habor reik means there's no stones. Okay, same idea. They didn't want him to injure his head. And ein v'mayim, they didn't want to throw him in and possibly drown. So those are, because he says that if we left him in there, or if this was a place that was, you know, maybe a well, right, then even if you know, just by putting him in there, we're not directly killing him, but very indirectly. I mean, almost directly, we're killing him, and that's exactly what he says. Ki'ilu haraguhu bi'adayim, if they threw him in there and he would drown. Okay, now the next pasuk. After they put him into the pit, so it says, "Vayeshvu lecho lechem, vayisu enehem vayiru." So he is, the Netziv is also pretty generous to the brothers. He says that they went to eat bread, but they're also watching. In other words, they know that they have. Remember, the whole discussion was, we're going to put him in the pit, and then we're going to figure out what we're going to do with him. So he says that they were watching to see, even though they're from a distance. So a couple of things which he says here, like the whole time they're watching. Okay, the second line. They couldn't sit restfully. They were just agitated over what they had done and what and the difficulties thereof. And honestly, at this point in time, you know, you kind of wonder, have they gone too... I mean, we know they've gone too far, but have they gone to a point of no return? Meaning, because they've thrown Yosef in a pit, what are they going to do? Right? They have a few options. But one option is clearly, at least for them, right? Reuven has his plan, but for them, the option of let's take him out and let him go home seems to be not really an option, right? Because, hey, Dad, you know what happened today? I mean, it's like, what are you going to do? So that's why what ended up happening for them was almost a blessing in that they didn't have to deal with it. They didn't have to deal with it anymore. And the Netziv's view is that every single thing which happens, just it aligned in a sense perfectly. Again, I don't want to say perfectly, but we know that this was the destiny. Yosef had to go down there to lay the groundwork for the family to come down later, and for them to come down, you know, in a chariot rather than in chains, because they're going to be slaves there for a while. So this was all part of God's plan. But the Netziv's perspective is that it's not just God's plan. It's everything is, I mean, the way you couldn't have planned this better. Okay, and as far as their attitude, if you turn to the top of page 3, they're watching. Okay, look at the end of that first line. Right, they felt very guilty about what they had done, and they wanted to make sure that nothing would endanger the move that they had taken by throwing Yosef in. In other words, what could happen? Maybe a wild animal can go over to the pit and jump in there and, you know, hustle tussle. There you go. That's the end of Yosef. Maybe somebody's going to come and kidnap him. Right? Who knows? So they're watching. That's the point. Then they see the Orchas Yishmaelim carrying spices. Look at what he says. How do camels carry spices? Or any animal carry spices? Right? Sacks over the top. Right? In other words, they're hanging down on the side. Well, if they're hanging down on the side, what does that mean? There is room
for someone to sit.
So he says, Yosef, you know, through all the trauma that Yosef had gone through, he says that it was great that these kinds of animals were coming down and carrying this kind of load and this kind of burden, because now there is room for Yosef to sit. So he does not have to walk down to Egypt. Okay? Vayim Shechu, the next one is in Pasuk Chavches, I'm in the Netziv booklet still. So he says that the whole idea of the Midianim, now the Netziv does not focus on the idea that there are Midianim and later on Midanim, but he does talk about the Midianim significantly here, where he says that that essentially the Midianim did all the dirty work, and that was actually better for the brothers. Because, so now there are two ways to look at it, of course. One way to look at it is that they didn't have to do the dirty work, okay? But another way to look at it is that, you know what? It's so painful for us as it is that if we actually had to take him, we would never be able to live with ourselves. But if the Midianim come along and they take Yosef out, and that leaves open to a debate as to who actually sold Yosef. Were the brothers involved at all and the Midianim took Yosef out? Because that's what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says, Vayim Shechu, Pasuk Chavches, Vayavru Anashim Midianim Socharim, that these Midianites passed by, Vayim Shechu, and they pulled, Vayalu Es Yosef, and they brought Yosef up from the pit, Vayim Karu Es Yosef LeYishmaelim, and they're the ones who sold Yosef to the Yishmaelim. So Rashi can throw in there and say that Vayim Shechu, the brothers pulled him out, but that's not what the Pasuk says, which is why there is a debate, right? Most famously, Rashbam and Cheskuni are of the view that the brothers had nothing to do with the purchase, and there are other ways that different commentaries try to explain it, but in either case, look at the second to last line of Pasuk Chavches here in the Netziv. He says that later on, when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, he says to them, "Ki mechartem osihena," like, don't feel badly that you sold me over here. Okay, in the second to last line, "Mishum shehema garmu ledavar." He says that even if they were not directly involved, and the Netziv thinks they were involved, in, you know, indirectly, that they did communicate with the Midianim, but the fact that they had put him in the pit, okay, makes them blameworthy of something. Okay, however you want to describe it, but the point is that from Yosef's perspective, you guys were involved. Okay, you definitely put me in the pit, and so whatever happened as a result was your at least partially you are to blame. Okay, So the Pasuk Lamed is again, that's the line that Reuben says Hayelad Einenu. So it goes back to this idea that he's referring to him as a yelid, eino chayiv onish klal. Okay, even though he's not a yelid, but because he's behaving like a yelid, so he's not he doesn't really deserve any punishment. Look at the beginnings of the next two comments that the Nitziv makes. Va'ani, Reuven's worried about himself. Reuven's concerned because the fact of the matter is, why is Yosef in the pit? It's Reuven's fault. For better or for worse, right? Reuven had a good plan, but for the worse, because it ended up backfiring. He says, right, Reuven had no clue what happened to Yosef. He was not present at the time of the sale. And so he thinks that Yosef might be dead. He, you know, more than even the brothers who have a better, who may have a better concept, assuming that they were involved with the Midianites. If they were not involved with the Midianites, and I don't know if any of them even know.
Did it say anywhere in the Chumash, where was Reuven when they were doing all of this deal?
Well, I mean, that's Rashi's thing. He says that Reuven either went back to serve Yaakov or he was doing tshuva over what happened with, over the Bilhah incident. But what happened with the Bilhah incident is a different discussion. I mean, the Chumash does not say. Okay, just to answer your question. Okay, let's continue. So now, remember, okay, I wanted to show you. I should have showed you this. Okay, look at Pasuk of Gimel. So again, I'm on page 204. But when Yosef came to his brothers, they took off Yosef's kutones. Okay, eskutones as apasim asher lav. Now, we saw this last year, that it could be referring to two different things. That there's a kasones, everybody wears a kasones, which is a tunic. And then Yosef has an additional kasones apasim. So, if they just took off all of his clothes, when they took him, so Yosef is basically naked, maybe he's wearing a loincloth, maybe he's got some nice boxer briefs, I don't know. But Yosef is essentially, but what do they do with those garments? No, what do they do with the garments at that point in time? Okay, they don't want to have any remnant of Yosef. They don't want to. I mean, if they're, you think they're walking around with Yosef's clothing, they you know, that's like evidence. Oh, you know, let's just check in your bag. Oh, how'd you get these clothes, guys? I mean, the last thing you want to do is be carrying. So the Nitziv's view is that they took Yosef's clothes and they just tossed it. Okay, they didn't want to see it. They didn't want to, you know, it's the trash. Get rid of it. We don't want to see this again. We don't want to have any memory of Yosef. But then what happens is after Yosef is sold and after Reuven comes along, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, top of page 206, Vayechuas Kesonis Yosef, Vayishchatus Yerizim, Vayitbaluas Hakatonis Badam. They took the Kesonis Yosef, okay? They slaughtered a goat and they dipped the Kesonis in blood. Notice how it's not referring to it as the Kesonis Pasim. Vayishalchuas Kesonis HaPasim, Vayaviyo Lavihem, Vayamruzos Matsano Akirna, Kesonis Binchahim. I mean, look at the language. It doesn't keep mentioning Kesonis Pasim. So the Nitziv, I think, is suggesting that there are two different garments here and that they treated each one a slightly different way. Okay, in other words, Yosef lost the Kesonis HaPasim and the other one is covered with blood. So take a look at the way he describes it. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. The pasuk should have said that they slaughtered the goat, they took Yosef's kesonas, and they dipped it in blood. That the pasuk is telling us that we're not talking about they're taking something that they had in order to dip it. The kesonas was long gone. Right, wherever they had taken it off Yosef, they just dropped it there. It's either going to be a reminder of their sin, or it's going to be a tremendous source of pain for them. So when they came up with their plan, they said, you know what, let's go retrieve the kesonis. If they slaughter the goat first, and then they go to get it, then what's going to happen in the meantime? All the blood's going to go out, and it's going to, you know, fall into the ground. Benko, yivalah adam ba'aretz. Mishamachi lachu tchilas haksonis. So then they first retrieved the ksonis. V'achagaf eishchatu sirizim. And then afterwards they slaughtered. Mishamachi lo ksivkan lashon apasim. Dafil lo hayash apasim lo yishtam shabot tchila. Okay, that, and it doesn't mention pasim because it wasn't about the ksonis apasim. It was about Yosef's garment, which is just a source of guilt and pain to them, no matter how you're going to look at it. Okay, vayishalchu. So they sent to the brother, to Yaakov rather. Kfiyas forno shechotchu osa bishalach kadeishet tisra esh zeivim They wanted the ksonas to look like it had been torn, so they cut it with their own teeth. Okay, it's not clear to me if the Netziv is making that distinction between a kasonas and a kasonas hapasim, but I think that the pasuk might be, and I think that I remember that point that we saw that last year, that the Or HaChaim certainly made that distinction.
He went to a lot of effort, these guys.
Listen, you got to cover your tracks. Okay. All right, now, so that's, hopefully those are a lot of new insights in the whole Yosef and the brothers story. Now we move on to the next portion of the story. Perek Lamed Ches is the story of Yehuda and Tamar and Yehuda's sons. So one of the interesting questions that we have with this whole thing, because if you look at the very beginning of Perek Lamed Ches on the top page 208, you'll see Vayhi be'esahi ve'yered Yehuda me'esachav. Right, so that's kind of a little bit of a contrast to the previous pasuk. Sorry, two pasukim. Sorry, I take back what I just said. The way, where is it? When Yosef is sold, the pasuk says, oh no, I'm sorry, I take it back. I'm wrong. It says, Vayaviu es Yosef Mitzrayim. I thought that Vayardu was, okay, but they brought Yosef down to Mitzrayim, and then Yaakov says, that's the contrast. Yaakov says, "Ki eired el bini of El Shaul, that I will go down to my son as a mourner." Okay, but the idea that Yosef is going to Egypt could nevertheless be viewed as a yirida of some kind. Certainly, because if he's going from Egypt to Eretz Canaan, we would call it aliyah. So it's a yirida. So there's that contrast of yirida to yirida. Anyway, the question is, when does this take place? Okay, in other words, does this whole story with Yehuda begin immediately after Yosef is sold? Right, does Yehuda get married right now, or was Yehuda married prior? Yosef is 17. We know that Yehuda is probably 3 or 4 years older than Yosef, so he's 20, 21. How old? Right, I mean, that's what he is. So is Yehuda getting married now? How much time between now and when they all come down to Egypt? 22 years, right? We know that Yosef is gone for 22 years. So 22 years, so now you look at this story that happens. Yehuda has Er and Onan and Shelah. Okay, Er and Onan marry Tamar, one after the other, each one dies, and then Yehuda has to wait a little bit more time until Shelah is old enough. So, how much more time is that? So, a view that I saw is, let's say, 4 years. So, an additional 4 years pass, and then Yehuda and Tamar have their rendezvous, because Tamar sees that she's not being given to Yehuda, and so then she gets pregnant, and then she has Peretz and Zerach. Okay, so how much time has passed? Okay, we don't know, but how much time has passed? Well, whatever. Okay, I mean, you have to assume that Er is going to be at least 13 years old, right? Because you're not getting married younger than that. And Onan, same thing. And now another 4 years, so 17 years have passed. By the time that that the twins are born, let's say Peretz and Zerah, okay. And now 5 years later, when they come down to Egypt, Peretz is already a father. Okay, that's the genealogy, the lineage. Mm-hmm. So how old are they? When does this story take place? And that's the point that it's... The Gemara says that they were all 8 years old when they fathered babies. That's what the Gemara says. Okay? I mean, there is no getting around how old Yehuda is when they get down to Egypt. Because we know how old Yosef is. Yosef is 39 when they get down to Egypt. So again, if Yehuda is 4 years older than Yosef, he's 43. So it's not crazy for Yehuda to be a grandfather at that point in time, but he had to wait 2 cycles of kids, right? You know, old enough for Aaron and Onan to be fathers, and then old enough for parents to be a father. And they were born after Aaron and Onan were already dead. So, okay, just think about that. And that's what he says. And he argues that it's at that same time. In other words, that same time range. It can't be that Yehuda, it can't be. It's unlikely that this story of Yehuda takes place after Yosef. He figures Yehuda is already a father, at least to Aaron Onan. They might not have met Tamar yet, but there's a little bit of a back history that's being presented to us here, insofar as Yehuda's marriage and children. Okay, that's the first paragraph, so we're not going to read that. And we turn to page 4, and we're going to go towards the end of the story. Okay, so So Tamar, after having seen that she is not being given to Shelah, Yehuda's third son, Shelah being the son of Bathshua. And who's Bathshua? She's the daughter of a Canaanite, right?
Yes.
Bas Ishkenani, Ushmo Shua, right? So Shua is a Canaanite. And so Yehuda's children are the sons of Yehuda and a Canaanite. Okay, let's just remember that. Canaanite lady. Okay, we're not going to, be critical of the wives of Yaakov's sons, because Yaakov clearly did not make the same rule that Avram had made for Yitzchak and that Yitzchak had made for Yaakov. Right? We don't see anything like that. So it's okay. That's fine. But we're going to see how the Netziv notes that there is an important distinction, and of course that's to Tamar's credit. Okay. So in Pasuk Yudches, what we see is that Tamar, dressed as a harlot, says to Yehuda, who has offered, to lay with her, he says, "What am I going to give you? Because I don't have any money." And she says to him, "Chosam chov, silecho matacha shabiyadecha," which is your signet, your cloak, and the staff that is in your hand. So the psil. So in here, if you take a look, basically, the Netziv says that all these things are markers of an important person. Okay, an important person either carries or wears these things. If you look in the second line of Pasuk Ches, Hasimla Shehu Abeged Elyon Malbush Anashim Chashuvim. Okay, that cloak is something that a nobleman, let's say, might wear. Look at the end of the third line. Ulaya Haya Psil Shetecheles. Maybe it was made out of Techeles, which, as we know, is a royal color. It's a royal garment. And where else in the Torah do we have the word psil? Hakanaf psil techeles. Okay? And of course it's Kedeliz Korkisi Akavod, because right, it's reminiscent of the sky, the heavens. Look at the end of the last long line there. Chosam hul mechokek. A seal is for what's a mechokek? That's a ruler, right? Psil hul mesbodei b'yiras Hashem. Psil is somebody who, because it's the color of the heavens, is somebody who contemplates God, and Mateh hu l'shevet Moshel. That's also, it's a staff is for a ruling tribe, and so therefore all of these things were indicators of the fact that the man that she lay with was an important person. Okay, not necessarily to identify him specifically, but to counter the next claim. Take a look at the next claim again in the Netziv still. Pasuk of Dalet. Vigam hine harol is nunim. The claim was made that Tamar was pregnant. I mean, obviously she was pregnant, but the claim was made. What does Liz Nunim mean? It means that people are accusing her of having had many, many encounters. Okay, Laharbe Minafim. A lot of people that she slept with. Why? Bashayadua de Zona Ina Misambaras Mahira. Right, a prostitute is not getting pregnant so quickly. Mishum Shehi Misapeches. I'm not really sure how to describe that, but I just think there's a lot flying around, if you know what I mean. You know, she's just not in the right kind of position and in the right kind of reality to be able to get pregnant. And so the assumption was, in order for her to have become pregnant, she must have slept with a lot of men, and that's why it's a sin on his honor, v'zechat al kavodo, that she just, I mean, what an insult to this family that she's become pregnant to some schnook. All right, look at the last two words, la'adam hedyot. So Tamar produces these items. Look at this. The Isha Sher Eilu Lo Pasuk Hei Hachavitzim Halalu. Whoever owns these things, that is the person to whom I became pregnant. So what does that tell us? Two things. Number one, Tamar knows to whom exactly she became pregnant, which means that she wasn't just being irresponsible sleeping with everybody under the sun. She knows exactly who the father of her baby. I don't know if they knew that it was twins yet at the time. And number two, it was an important person. Okay, evidenced by what this is. Now, Yehuda comes along and admits it. So, kol kavod to Yehuda for saying, you know what, it was me. And that is the next comment, Pasuk Chafav, where he says, look, for Yehuda and Tamar, you can look at their motivation as either l'gnai or l'shevach. Okay, now, in Yehuda's case, he didn't really know that it was Tamar. Tamar did know that it was Yehuda. So look at the way that he says it. Okay, look at the end of the second line again in Pasuk Chavav. Imboy leha aleha shalobishvil akamas shame ugnai. If he came upon her not for the sake of establishing his family name, then it is denigrating to him. Vil akamas shame ushevach. But if he did it to continue his family name, then that is praiseworthy. But the fact of the matter is, achein Yehuda shalo yadashi Tamar imuzelo shevach lognai. The fact of the matter is, in terms of Yehuda's having a union with Tamar, there's one problem. Yehuda did not know that it was Tamar. So we can be critical of Yehuda for sleeping with a harlot, but we can't be critical of Yehuda's connection with Tamar specifically because he didn't know that it was her. Aval Tamar, if she was doing it because, hey, you know what? I've been sitting alone, I'm feeling lonely, and I want the companionship of a man, so that's not appropriate. But if she's doing it specifically, knowing it's Yehuda, and of course she is, she knows it's Yehuda, okay, and she wants to have children with him, then Masra Nafsha Bishvil Zeh, she was willing to give her life for that. And that is something which is a Shevach. And of course, that's the reputation that Tamar has in the canon of our history. Okay, I mean, from whom does, which child of Yehuda is the line of King David? Okay, Peretz. Okay, we know that from the Book of Ruth. Next. Yehuda says, Tzad Kami Meni, that she is, so that's a good question, what is Tzad Kami Meni? But Tzad Kami means that she's more righteous than I am, essentially. And he says, Yoter Mimeni, Shehi Kivna L'Shem Mitzvah. Her Kavana was for Mitzvah. Mine, a moment's pleasure, right? And okay, take a look, let's just skip to the end of the next line. V'yamar, Mishum Shehi Tzadka, V'yispala L'Kim Zera Mimeni. She specifically wanted to have a child with me. She saw I wasn't giving her a Shayla, but you know what? Shayla wasn't even good enough for her. Why? And I alluded to this before. Shani Chashuv. I'm more important. Why? Because who are my parents?
Ben Yaakov and Leah.
Yosef Mebani, more than my son, Shul Ben Kananis, because his mother was a Canaanite. Okay? And that's why it's Tzad Kami Meni. I wanted to give her to Shayla. The fact of the matter is, it needed to be me. And who knew that? Not me, Yehuda's saying. I didn't realize this, but Tamar realized this. And that's why it said Kami Meni. That's a beautiful interpretation. I think it's beautiful. Okay. All right, we continue now with the tale moving to Yosef in Egypt. Yosef in Egypt. So Yosef is brought down. Yosef is brought down to Egypt. Okay. I'm not going to read this inside, but I found this to be interesting. So it describes how in Egypt they had a system, because it was a slave culture. So sometimes somebody who was a slave, I don't want to say a slave trader, but somebody who would transport the slave could not take the responsibility of feeding the slave until the slave actually was sold. So what would happen is that the slave was put into the general slave market, and there was an overseer of the slave market. Who is the overseer of the slave market? Potiphar. Okay? Now, what's the problem if you're the overseer of the slave market? It would seem highly corrupt if you got first dibs. Okay? Right? And that's something which, you know, in Paris, you know, they're not going to have that kind of corruption. So the point that he makes here is the fact that Potiphar gets him is a problem. Unless you realize that Yosef was essentially sold right away. And that's what he says here. Hold on, what did I do here? If you just look in the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth line, ain in the middle where it's in bold, ain amamuna rashali kachle atzum min hadimusia. The dimusia means the general, you know, the general slave population. Okay, the reason why it worked here was aval imamocher mevi beatzma alashuk lemkor haloa kol shavim. Okay, but if the Yishmaelim who brought him down come along to the market and they say here's for sale, and he gets sold right away, then he hasn't been thrown into the general market that's under Potiphar's control, and therefore Potiphar was able to buy him. Again, the Netziv is showing how everything that happens to Yosef is Hashgachas Hashem. The best place that Yosef could have been a slave is in Potiphar's house. We're going to see a few reasons why. Okay, take a look. We're not going to look at the Pesukim. I just want you to see in the Netziv. So we're now on page 5. By Hib Veis Adonav Amitri. The fact that he was in the house was to Yosef's benefit. Had he been a field worker, had he been picking cotton, whatever they would do in Egypt, I have no idea. Okay, Potiphar wouldn't have noticed him. Potiphar wouldn't have seen that he was talented, that he was successful, that he was the right kind of guy to be hired for Potiphar, to be Potiphar's right-hand man. Yosef was building his resume because he's in Potiphar's house and he rises to the top. Okay? That he saw that God was with him and that he was successful in everything that he did. Okay, and by the way, there's, you know, you have to see, if you go on YouTube and if you could find it, there's Christians have made a lot of movies about some of these biblical stories. And there's one about Joseph, and the guy who plays Potiphar is Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you find the ones Ben, you have to see the relationship that the way they portray Yosef and Potiphar. It's the way that I always imagined it from the time that I began to understand this stuff. Okay, and the great example is when Potiphar's wife accuses Yosef of what she accuses him, right? So Potiphar comes down, which is why the musical is so dumb. Letting out a mighty roar, Joseph, I'll see you right. That's not what happened. Potiphar comes along, his wife tells him the story, and he's like, you're such a liar. You know, like he knows his wife's a, you know. But the way that Ben Kingsley portrays it, comes in and he says to Yosef, okay, did you do it? And he's like, no, I don't touch women. Okay, in a way which is like non, I mean, you know, whatever, Yosef's a kid, he's never done this, anything like this. And Ben Kingsley's like, all right, what, you know, I got to put you in jail because, you know, master's wife and, you know, master and slave. But I'm going to put you in a good jail. Okay, and of course he's in the base, he gets in the base jail. What jail is he in? He's in the base, Sarat HaBachim. What does that mean? He's in Potiphar's basement, okay? He's not in a dungeon. He's under house arrest. Okay, now he can't come out until circumstances align for it. But the Netziv says exactly that. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Zayin, and we're going to get back to just a couple of notes which I gave you here. But take a look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. When the wife says to Potiphar, "Kadvarim ha'ilo, asal liavdecha," this is exactly what your servant did to me. Im kein ulayach kora adam meham v'tisha'er kesav anis al kein shin sadvarev am rabbi ilaya evet. She says it was the servant. Shehu be'emes evet kanu ladanov, that he's really an evet. He's a slave, and therefore. Look at the last line, and it says, "Umela eches ha'adon adonaso ve'elu lahakelba." Okay, he can't be lenient, even though he knows that she's a liar. But the master's wife does not lose in the court case to it's like the South in the slave period, or even through To Kill a Mockingbird, right, and beyond. Okay, Tom Robinson might be innocent as anything, but it's Alabama in the 1920s or 30s, whatever it is. He's going to be guilty. That's the way it goes. And it's the same thing with Yosef. Now, she refers to him as an Eved. How did she refer to him earlier? Okay? Pasuk Yudalad. You see where I put anti-Semitism 101? That's his comment on Pasuk Yudalad. So let's take a look at all this stuff. Ish Ivri. Ish Ivri. My master brought an Ish Ivri. A man. What is he? Is he a man or is he an Eved? Okay? Well, to her, he was a man. At first.
As
no. Well, yeah. But she says... He's an ish, because that's why she could desire him. Because she didn't see him as an Eved until she needed to put him in jail to protect her own ill doings. Ish Ivri, lo amra lahen Eved, kamo she'amra l'adon. She didn't call him a slave like she did to the master. Mishum delefi dvareha l'anshe beisa sheba l'shkab yimam amish. She told everybody, oh no, he can't. Ein afkamina imu Eved o ben chor mishari sabayis. It doesn't matter if he is a slave or a free person who works in the house, right? He could be the electrician who came in, the plumber, right? The contractor. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's the master who brought this man into the building. He's a man, and he tried to rape me. You're a liar. But take a look at the next line. Ivri. Sheyadua haya. Who are those Ivrim? They got a hooked nose. They got beady eyes, right? All they do is they want our Egyptian women. Their religion is fire. They're strong like fire. All they want is to take Egyptian women. That's why he's a man, because that's what he wants. Evidence? Proof? Anything? No, they're all the same. They're all the same. The Ephraim. Anti-Semitism 101. Okay? Proof is in the pudding. Look at the way she talks about him. Ish Ivri. Ish and Ivri. What's the difference that he's an Ivri? Just say the schnook. If you want to, you know. No. It's a Jew. Okay. Finally, we get up to the last chapter here. And the last chapter is when the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ofim get into prison. Okay, and again, we don't have the time to go through all of the story, but just a couple things that the Netziv points out. Okay, so if you just take a look back, just to see the setup, on page 216, Pasuk Chaf, okay, Vayikach Adonai Yosef Oso Vayitenei Al Beis HaSoar Mekom Asher Asiriyah Melech HaSurim. So he places him, like, doesn't throw him. It's not like even the brothers, Vayishlichlos Obor Vayitenei, we put in there gently the place where there are political prisoners. Vayisham Beis HaSoar. Okay, what's the Beis HaSoar? All right, that's a good question. And Yosef becomes like the top notch in the Beis HaSoar. Okay, and that's what it keeps on saying. Vayi Hashem Es Yosef Vayit Elav Chaser Vayitein Chino Beinei Sar Beis HaSoar, in the eyes of the Sar, the officer of the Beis HaSoar, Yosef's tops, Vayitein Sar Beis HaSoar Beyad Asirim, Yosef's in charge of all of the Asirim, the prisoners, Asher Beis HaSoar, and he did everything that they did, he was in charge. Pasal Gimel Ein Sar Beis HaSoar, Oesko, right, you see that Yosef is in his Beis HaSoar. Next. That the Sarah Ufim and the Sarah Mashkim are brought in. By so paro al sneser al sar mashkim al sar ufim pasuk gimel by tain osam b'mishmar beis sar tabachim al beis hasoar mekom asher Yosef asur sham. So they're in a mishmar which is in this beis hasoar. Now what is a mishmar? Take a look at the next pasuk. By kod sar tabachim es Yosef itam by shar. Who's the sar tabachim? That's not the head of the beis hasoar. That's Potiphar. Potiphar is a Sarat HaBachim. We know that from when Yosef is sold. So Potiphar takes Yosef out of the Beis HaSoar and says, you're going to be in the special holding cell, which is a much lighter holding cell, a mishmar. What is a mishmar? A Beis HaSoar is a prison. What's a mishmar? Whatever. Mishmar. Prison light. Mishmar. Pizza. Okay. but where are these guys are going to be? Why Yosef? Because, Yosef, they need a servant to watch these guys who are officers of Paro. We don't even know how long they're going to be in there for. So Yosef's in there, and then immediately, Vayachalomu chalom shneihem yish chalomo b'layla chadif yish kivizron chalomo. So take a look at the Nitziv here, Pasuk Gimel. Lo yonish leishev is Beis HaSoar. They're not in the Beis HaSoar, the real prison. El mishmar at shiachru b'dinam. They're not going to be there very long. They needed to have, it's a holding cell for them. They're going to be there for a week. Who knows how long they're going to be there? Okay, I mean, we know that from the time they dream until the time they get taken out, it's a period of 3 days. Okay, and that's the first point. So what that means, though, is that Yosef is certainly, in this case, he's not in a boar. Now they're later going to take him out of the pit when Yosef is there, but because after this Yosef goes back. But the point is that he does get opportunities, even in this prison. I have kodosam, so alum in abor l'shevesitam, v'hayitam miyutar. So in other words, Yosef, we know he had been in a Beis HaSoar up until that, because that was the phrase that had been emphasized over and over. But now, these guys are in a mishmar, so Yosef is taken out in order to be able to serve them. Okay, and he goes on to explain that these guys, look at the middle of the second line in Pasuk Dalet. Vasher hema hayu mistama chachamim b'teva ma'ase mashkev afia. That these guys understood the science of wine pouring and the science of baking. Okay, Yosef, I think I'm kin mutsiyam b'zeh. And Yosef, it was a great guy to have in prison because Yosef, maybe he developed these skills while he was in the Beis HaSoar, but Yosef understands these things, and so he's a good person for them to talk to because they don't know, they're a little nervous, they don't know how long they're going to be there. Somebody shares some. Look at the end of the second to last line. Me'atzmo. You see the word me'atzmo? Me'atzmo shereso some. He served them alone. Kederach midas Yisrael lashpilas atzmo fnei sarei umos ha'olam. He's following a certain way of the Jewish people to humble themselves in front of officers of the nations of the world. Ulahakir hachemla asher nidrashim me'od l'shimush l'fei haraglam ve'inish acher zulaso. And to recognize the significance of the opportunity that he has the chance to serve them, and therefore to get in their good graces, and to get and that there is nobody else doing there, and he essentially is making the point that again it's hashgacha that Yosef is in the circumstance that allows him to be in this capacity. Yeah. Now they tell over their dreams, and so the Saramashkim tells over his dream, and Yosef says to him, when he says, I was in a dream, and there were three vines, and I took the grapes, and I squeezed out wine, and I gave the cup to Paro, and however it describes. And Vayomer lo Yosef, Zep Hisrono. Yosef says, Zep Hisrono, this is its interpretation. And Tziv says, you basically just interpreted your own dream, okay? In other words, what you just described is hachalom upizaron, right? Look at the top of page 6, that the dream is the interpretation. All I need, you are going to be giving you're going to be giving the wine to Pharaoh again. I just need to explain to you some of the details. Shalosh yamim. How did Yosef know that three vines equals 3 days? He says, "Haven zem ismichas aperach lahanetz labishul." The fact that the stuff grew so quickly, he knew that the three meant a very quick amount of time. Okay, and the commentaries debate about this. By the way, how did Yosef know that three equals 3 days? All right, some suggest that Yosef knew that there was going to be a party in 3 days, and that because that was a time when Paro would process political prisoners and decide who he's going to let out or who's going to stay. Okay, whatever that may be. But in any case, he views it in the way that I said, that it, because it was just such a quick growth of the vine, therefore it's going to be a quick process until you get out of here. As far as Yosef's interpretation to him, Kimishpata Rishona Sharaisa Mashkehu, that you're going to get your job back, he basically describes that the way you're going to get your job is the way that you first got your job. You're just going to love it. Can you imagine the first time the Tsar Mashkim was appointed to Tsar Mashkim? And I was trying to figure out, because the Netziv doesn't exactly say this, but I was wondering if what he meant was, or if what he's kind of hinting to, is that, I don't remember, I think Pete Rose was the last of the player coaches, if I'm not mistaken. Something like that. You know what I'm talking about? Where you have a player who's also the coach. He just loves playing so much. Management, right? The player manager. What? Was he the last one?
He was a manager.
Right, but he was also playing at the time. So I think he was the last of those. Once upon a time, there were a lot more of those. Right now, the manager's a totally different kind of job, or a manager might be a retired player. Okay. But there's something about the love of the game that somebody doesn't want, right? How often do you see nowadays that the director of a movie, that the director of a movie is in the movie because he's really an actor and he wants to be an actor? I'm not talking about Alfred Hitchcock giving himself a cameo. Okay, that's very different. But that they're in the movie and that they're the star of the movie, or at least have a significant role in the movie. It depends on who the script is about. But anyway. Clint Eastwood did Million Dollar Baby. The movie wasn't about him, it was about the girl. But he has a significant role in the movie. Okay, so that's just as an example. So he describes here how the Tsar Mashkim just loved serving Paro. So I wonder if the Tsar Mashkim, right, I think it's Rashi, the Midrash certainly says that the reason why they get sent into prison was the Tsar Mashkim because it was a fly in the cup, and the Tsar Ofim because there's a stone in the bread. Okay, whatever. What's the difference between those two actions? So the fly in the cup, it's clear. Here you go, the fly. How are you going to stop that? You can't really stop that. So it's less negligence than if there's a stone actually baked into the bread. You totally missed that one. Okay, you really were negligent. So there's a totally different thing. And so, but maybe at that point in time, the Tsar Mashkin was just the overseer. Right, and he had just gotten so up. You know what? I don't love it anymore. I'm happy to oversight, and that's why he's able to get out, because he didn't even present the wine. He's just punished because it happened. So he's able to get his job back, and the Netziv says maybe he can even serve Pyro again the same way that he used to, and he could take extra care the way that he wasn't able to in what got him into prison. I think maybe I'm taking it a step further, but that's what I like to think the Netziv is saying. Now. Pasuk Tazayin is Vayar Tsar Ofim. Pasuk Tazayin, Vayar Tsar Ofim Kitov Pasar. So the Tsar Ofim saw that he had interpreted well, and he says to Yosef, "Afani bechalom ivinei shlosha selechori al roshi." So this is fascinating. And now last year we saw what I found to be one of my favorite interpretations, and that is that each of them had their own dream, and they also dreamed the other one's interpretation. Okay, so the Tsar Mashkim saw he's going to die. He's like, is that what's going to happen to me? So he says to Yosef, can you tell me what my dream means? Okay? So when he hears it, and he says, oh, that's what it means, great. The Tsar Ofim dreamed the Tsar Mashkim's interpretation. He wasn't planning to tell his dream to Yosef, because Tsar Mashkim, he knew, was going to survive. So he said, obviously, my dream means the same thing, so he's going to survive. But when he hears that Yosef interpreted for the Tsar Mashkim, he goes, good kazak, because that's exactly what I saw in my dream. He says, good, now maybe you'll explain to me mine, because there's a few things in my dream that I don't understand. And then Yosef goes ahead and tells him, yeah, okay, sorry, you're going to, the fact that they're eating, that the birds are eating the thing off of your head and you're not actually serving Paro is actually not a good sign. They're going to be eating, your head's going to be taken off and they're going to be eating your flesh. Okay, Vayas ha'ofim, bir ha'kasu, pasuk design, ki below zeh shera'a, lo yamaskim l'saperach alam al Yosef, k'mon sh'as ha'sar mashkim, v'os al ro'a lev. So he says, not what the Arachayim said, but he says that, If the Tsar Ofim, the baker, had not been satisfied by the way that Yosef had interpreted the details of the Tsar Mashkim's dream, he never would have told his dream to Yosef. Okay, and that just shows how tzekrachetze he was. Just a negative person. that he felt that Yosef had actually interpreted every aspect of the dream. Now, a number of commentaries take issue with that. The Aksava Kabbalah did, the Aruch Chaim did, where they felt that a lot of the details of these dreams were actually messages to Yosef, but he feels, and Itzib feels, that the interpretation that Yosef gave to the Sarah Mashkim was in fact covering for every little detail of the dream. Okay, whatever it may be, and that's why he gives over his dream. Afani b'chalomi b'krov divrei chalomos avalim ra'isi davar shanikali kihud sodek. Right, there's always a lot of shtuyot, there's some silliness in a dream, but somehow he was able to discern that Yosef had covered everything, so he felt that would be a good thing as well. So that we've come to our conclusion. We actually finished the whole packet, and hopefully, just again, new insights in the parsha from the Netziv. Shkoyach, everybody.